X's and Bros here on the Michigan Sports Network is brought to you today by TwinSpires Online Sportsbook Racing and Casino. Download the TwinSpires Sportsbook app today, and new users can enjoy 7 days of risk-free betting up to $1,000 using the promo code FREE1000. Welcome back here to X's and Bros on the Michigan Sports Network. Danica Hadlin, Ryan Elke in the Motor City studio. Anthony Bellino coming to you from the Radio Bunker. Joining us on the horn right now, the managing editor at Pride of Detroit, our good buddy, Eric Schlitt. Eric, my friend, first and foremost, thanks for taking the time to join us today. We greatly appreciate it. How are you, partner?
I'm doing good. You know, I'm excited for the better weather, and it'll be good for my children to be able to get outside a lot more.
You know, as a father, I believe of three, if I'm not mistaken, just having anything outdoors is like, just go to the backyard, the side yard, the front yard, just get out of the house, run around, tire yourselves out. I can't imagine how you're handling all of that.
Yeah, it's much appreciated. I hope it sticks around and we don't get another April snow like we did earlier.
Yeah, definitely not. Just absolutely chaos, because if you think back to last week, opening day, we had snow flurries, then all of a sudden it's like 80 degrees, and it's like, man, we can go short sleeves and shorts if we want to. Short sleeves and shorts is usually what we'd be getting throughout the NFL Combine, a.k.a. the Underwear Olympics, but obviously there's no Combine because of the COVID protocol, so it's pro days across the board for the NFL. How has no Combine, Eric, really affected how teams are trying to operate and do business this year, and what do you think maybe some of the long-term ramifications of this might be?
I think the hardest thing is you're not getting a universal platform to judge players against each other. Instead, you're judging them one at a time at their pro day on their home surface. And you lose a little bit of luster by not being able to watch guys back to back to back in the same position, because you can really pick up on some of the nuances of those players in the different drills. Now, as far as the future, I think there's some benefit to having these players work out at their pro days, because we're seeing a lot more productive scoring. We're seeing higher jumps. We're seeing faster times. And I know a lot of that is, you know, maybe a little home cooking on what's being reported. But what you have to remember with the combine is that it's a 5-day marathon of, you know, interviews and tests and hospital visits, and the players are up 18 hours, 20 hours a day. They're getting, you know, 4 hours of sleep a night. And then by day five, that's when they do their on-field drills. And so by the end of these 5 days, they're pretty exhausted. So they're not putting out their peak performances, which is why you typically see better results on these pro days. Guys are rested, they're prepared better, they're more comfortable at home. And so I think there will be some aspects that the NFL will want to keep. You know, we've seen this with a lot of how the COVID situation has impacted the NFL. There's some things that they're going to look at and say, this is really better for the player. And so maybe we're going to keep that. I'd like to see them create more comfortable situations for the players to put their best foot forward. And I think the NFL would want to do that too.
Yeah, I was going to ask that next, but you've already answered that question about just the grueling process, because you usually work out like the last day that you're there, and that makes it challenging. I guess from the organization standpoint, now you have to have visits if you want to get your medical team, want to get their hands on them, because there isn't really like a standardized medical that's available for these teams. So a lot more homework is going to have to be done on that end of things. But I mean, outside of that, it seems like, as you mentioned, all the scores are up, players are more comfortable, guys are moving around a lot better, and it's been a good thing. Have you been surprised, Eric, at the amount of movement that we've already seen pre-draft, as far as teams jockeying for position, moving up, moving back, acquiring new picks? And you look at teams like the Jets and the Dolphins that are just loading up on draft picks. I mean, it's been kind of wild so far.
Yeah, you know, I think whenever you have a class that's heavy with quarterbacks at the top, you're going to see movement like this. And so I'm not overly surprised that we've seen some of these trade-outs. It's a little surprising to see them this early in the process, but I think it speaks to the fact that the NFL has a hierarchy of where they think these quarterbacks fall. And Lawrence is, of course, at the top. And it seems like the Jets are enamored with Wilson. And then, you know, there was a little bit of mystery. Who's going to be the next quarterback? Is it just going to be a preference? then, you know, now the 49ers trade up and they've got a target and you're not really sure which guy exactly they want, but they're going to take a quarterback one way or another. And now it just becomes, well, what is Atlanta going to do? And then I think what Atlanta does will directly impact what Detroit does, because I think they're kind of tied to the hip a little bit, because both teams could use a quarterback long-term, but both teams are not married to having to get a quarterback this year, which gives them some flexibility. And there's some quarterback hungry teams that are out there that are going to be looking to move up. Now, I'm not expecting any earlier trades like we saw with the 49ers and the Dolphins, but a draft day trade, it could be in the works.
Eric Schlitt joining us right now. You can find him on Twitter at Eric Schlitt, and of course, writing for the managing editor of the Pride of Detroit. And Eric, we talked a little bit about this yesterday, and I'm always enamored by every year there just seems to be, and there's no doubt that quarterback is the most valuable player on the field. That's why they win all the MVP awards and they get the great commercials with, like, you know, Head and Shoulders and Patrick Mahomes is smeared all over the television now with, you know, insurance companies. And that is the position. You touch the ball every single play when your unit is on the field. And so there's always going to be value, obviously, in that position. It's very difficult to win without one. But there's also this weird sort of like NFL draft. Oh my goodness, somebody took a quarterback, and it's like a fantasy football draft in your fantasy league when somebody takes a tight end and then just all the tight ends like fall off the board. And it's like, what is going on right now? I kind of feel like that's how we look at quarterbacks come draft time. They're always overvalued. If you look back to the top selections over the 2016 to 2018 drafts, the only guy that's still on his present team right now is Baker Mayfield. Everybody else has already changed teams and is looking for a quote-unquote second opportunity. So why do you think there's so much value on Zach Wilson and so much value on Trey Lance, who didn't even play, you know, much less Power 5 football? He didn't play Division 1 football, and I'm still enamored by that aspect of it. And then, you know, Justin Fields, okay, here's a kid out of Ohio State who played in big-time games and had big games and big moments, and he was electric throwing the football, and now it's like he's dropping in value. I can't figure any of this out. Look at Mac Jones is ascending up the boards now.
Yeah, I think it's all about the fact that even the most seasoned scouts struggle to get a accurate grade on quarterbacks, and that's why we see so much movement when it doesn't work out, and that's why there's such value placed on it, not just because the position is of such a high importance, but also because it's so hard to figure out which guy is the right guy. And if you think you know which one it is, you have to be aggressive and go get them. So it's when I create my draft board, I create two boards. I create a quarterback board and then everybody else, because the quarterbacks are really an entity upon themselves. They're so hard to evaluate. There's so many hits and misses. I mean, look, there's five quarterbacks right now that could all go in the top 10. How are the odds that all five of those guys hit? You know what I mean? Like, it's so low. Like you had just mentioned, only Baker is the only one remaining out of the last, what, 4 or 5 years, right? So the chances are pretty slim that all these guys are going to hit. It's just a matter of which one. And so it's going to create a unique situation for a team like Atlanta and like Detroit who – don't need a quarterback right now. Are they, you know, so confident in their ability to, you know, analyze and project what this quarterback is going to do that they're willing to risk, you know, essentially their future by using the number of first round pick on a guy that, you know, you might not find out for 2 years if he's the right guy or not. So it's a big gamble for a team that is going to sit and wait. Even though I like the draft and develop style, it's so interesting how these teams are approaching it, because there's really no guarantees at the quarterback position.
Eric, am I crazy for believing that if you're going to draft and develop, do it in the third round? Don't blow number 7 here with the top 10 pick. I mean, I didn't hate Jeffrey Okuda being selected at 3. In fact, I really liked it, because I looked going into last year, I was like, okay, if this team is going to make a run, everybody's back is against the wall. This is a position of need for them. They draft corner, obviously. You know, whether it's the fact that he had trouble covering or the fact that no one could get to the quarterback or a good combination of both, it didn't work out well, right? So I get a lot of heat for liking Jeff Okuda, because I think it's a position of need where they got a talented young man and that he just has to be put in the right position. I want to stay as far away from a quarterback as possible. That's why I loved getting Jared Goff in return from the Rams. It was because, hey, here's somebody that can drive this car, you know, for the next couple of seasons. Let's put some wheels on it. Let's fix the muffler. Let's get a windshield. Like, there were so many other parts to this vehicle that were just broken that it, for me, addressing quarterback at number 7 in this year's draft when it's not a pressing need seems like a waste of a pick.
I go back and forth because, like I said, I like the draft and develop concept. I just don't think that the Lions are going to feel that they need to draft and develop this year. I think they'll go into next year's draft saying, maybe we draft and develop a guy now. As far as the, you know, when do you take a guy that you're going to develop? Again, with the quarterbacks, because they're so difficult, you either, in my opinion, you either have a first rounder or is a day 3 guy. I'm not a huge fan of taking quarterbacks on day 2 because you're kind of putting these guys in limbo. Most of the day 2 quarterbacks that you see find success, there's always talk about them, you know, their team's always looking for the next guy because they didn't have a first rounder. Look at Philly, right? Philly drafted Carson Wentz and he was doing great, and then they drafted Jalen Hurts last year. Yeah, in the second round, and then Hurts outplays Wentz, and now they trade Wentz, and then Hurts looks like the quarterback, but there's still talk that the Eagles might be interested in bringing competition in for him, and I think a lot of that is because Hurts was never considered a number one quarterback and never considered a first rounder with long-term potential, and so it's such a difficult position. In my opinion, you're either a first rounder or you're probably a backup. And that's just the way it is with the quarterback position. It's so tough. And because of that, I do lean towards the Lions not going quarterback at 7. They seem enamored with Goff. I mean, look, Holmes was a big part in Goff becoming a LA Ram, right? And so I think Holmes is saying, you know, we just renegotiated your contract. We restructured your contract, and you're going to be our quarterback for the next 2 years. We're probably going to draft a quarterback at some point if you don't do well, but they're going to have 3 shots at this. And with 2 quarterback or 2 first round picks in each of the next 2 drafts, they're going to have the capital to move around and try and go after a guy that they like if they like a guy in the next 2 drafts. Because even though the whole draft and develop is a good idea, they may give Goff 2 years, and then if Goff doesn't work out, be like, well, we'll just get a quarterback that year, you know? So it's really all very up in the air, but I'm leaning towards not taking a quarterback. It's just everything they're doing points away from it.
He is Eric Schlitt. You can find his work at Pride of Detroit, and I like the fact that you said that. I can feel like I might be able to sleep easier this evening, Eric, because I was nervous about it because there was that report out of Denver that was like, hey, don't be surprised if, you know, Detroit, you know, they might be interested in a quarterback at 7. And in my mind, I immediately thought, okay, this is Twitter. This is perfect. This is what we want. We want everybody in the news cycle to believe the Lions are taking a quarterback at 7 so that we can just add some more picks. And if we got to move back a couple spots, we move back a couple spots. What is the biggest or greatest position of need as the way that you see this Detroit Lions team right now? Do they have to go with a pass catcher, like if Kyle Pitts is there, or Jamar Chase, Devontae Adams, Jalen Waddle, whomever the pass catcher might be? Do they look at linebacker with Micah Parsons, even though he's got some kind of some dark background baggage attached to his time at Penn State, but the guy is an absolute animal on the field. And for me, linebacker is a position that they desperately need, but have tried to address a little bit this offseason.
Yeah, for me, I don't think anything's off the table because you do have so many needs to fill. And the fact, because the league is in such a salary cap pinch this year, that almost every one of the guys that they signed is on a 1-year contract, right? Except for Jamal Williams, right? So the fact that they're handing out all these 1-year contracts means a year from now, you're still going to have these same needs that you have players in positions. So, like, for example, with Anzalone, you have him as one of your probably starting linebackers right now with Jamie Collins. And so you might look at Parsons and say, maybe that's not as big of a need. But then again, you think about the fact that Anzalone's on a 1-year deal. Collins only has 2 years left on his deal. So maybe they are valuing Parsons. I don't think they are personally. I think they're going to stick on offense. That's where the value is. But you can put that same scenario into play at receiver. You can put it in at offensive tackle, because after the 2021 season is over, you're not going to have potentially a right tackle if Tyrell Crosby moves on. Hal Vaihke's contract is very burdensome, and you might lose him as well. So that means you might need to replace the whole right side of your offensive line. And so that's a need long term, and that's really what you use the draft for. So I'm not taking offensive tackle off the table. I'm not taking receiver off the table. And in my opinion, there's more value at those spots than there is at anywhere on the defense. But when you get into day two, linebacker is going to be something that they want to look at. Cornerback, so they definitely need a safety. I'm expecting them to go after them. And then again, if they take a receiver, then you got to get an offensive lineman on day two probably as well. So safety, offensive line, those two are going to be big needs. I mean, and obviously the pass catcher.
Last one here for you, Eric. How do you what do you make of what Brad Holmes has done thus far? He and his staff in the front office and in free agency and in this offseason period, you know, being able to acquire some guys that might not be household names, but do add some depth here to this roster that desperately needed it.
Yeah, you know, I think Campbell pointed this out when he said, look, they're looking for the right type of player, one who is looking to prove themselves. And a lot of the players that they've brought in have been those types of guys. Tyrell Williams, the receiver, didn't play last year because he was injured. And so he was due $11 million and the Raiders cut him. And so now he's got something to prove. He's got to prove that he's worth that much money. Perryman has kind of been a journeyman who his last real successful season was with Tampa when Antoine Randleau was one of his position coaches. And he's looking to reconnect and show that he's, you know, deserves to stay long-term at one spot. Anzalone, the Saints didn't want him. You know, he went from a starter and then they traded for his replacement and they had him coming off the bench for a couple of weeks. And so he felt disrespected. He's looking to rebound. It's a lot of that type of situation. I mean, Quentin Dunbar, who they just signed, was the second best corner in the league in 2019, according to PFF. And then he gets traded to Seattle and he has a really rough off the field, a couple of situations going on off the field. He has an injury and he struggles. And so now he's looking to rebound and say, hey, I'm can still be that player that I was. I'm still an NFL starter. So they've got a lot of guys who are on 1-year contracts who are hungry to prove themselves. And there's no long-term commitment to it, but they also have an inside track to sign them if they do. So it makes sense for a rebuild. I'd like more than 6 draft picks, and that's why I think trading down, if they could do it, they definitely would. But they got a lot of needs to fill. They've got a lot of guys looking to prove themselves, and so it's a good base for a first year of a rebuild. And then what he's doing right now is he's getting the cap right, and once he gets the cap right, now you're looking at 2022-23. You're going to be in a better cap situation. You're going to have more foundational pieces. The NFL is going to be moving financially in a better situation so that you're going to be able to give out bigger contracts. And that's when you really start to build on top of this base. But right now, he's not overspending. He's playing, I think, a smart game with money and capital. And it's a good start for first year of a rebuild for certain.
He is Eric Schlitt. You can find his work at the Pride of Detroit, the managing editor over there, and on Twitter at Eric Schlitt. Eric, my friend, thank you so much for your time today, my man. We greatly appreciate it.
Of course, man. I always love talking to you.